Hi out there, everyone, and welcome to Spoiler Piece Theater, the podcast that doesn't give a shit about spoilers. We just want to talk about the movies. My name is Dave Riedel. My pronouns are he, him. I talk about movies. I write about movies for the Chicago Reader, and I'm a member of the Boston Online Film Critics Association.
My name is Evan Crean. My pronouns are he, him. I am co-chair of the Boston Online Film Critics Association and co-author of your 80s movie guide to better living.
Yeah.
A
different one. Yeah. Just wanted to tell you before we get into it that Megan could not join us tonight because she is enjoying a week of freedom from Spoiler Piece. She's on vacation.
Yes.
So
we hope she's having fun, though. We miss her.
Sure she's having fun. Sure she is. We do miss her indeed. She will be back next week. And Evan and I, because Evan is moving and because I'm lazy, we decided to just do one movie this week. So we'll get to that in a moment. But before we do, just wanted to mention really quickly over on our Patreon, Evan and I are talking about the 1981 Brian De Palma / Alfred Hitchcock / Antonioni film Blowout, starring John Travolta as a sound man who thinks he hears a murder, and Nancy Allen is the woman who may have been at the scene of the murder. And it's a lot of fun. And like we said, if you're a $5 patron or more, you can listen to that episode and all the bonus episodes we've done, which is around 250, 300. I don't know. It's a lot.
I've lost track. Yeah.
Yeah. I have too. Yeah. Anyway, so we got one movie.
Yes, we do.
Yeah. We're going to be talking about, it's actually a movie. It's really called Tetris. You've probably heard of it. The game. I don't know if you've heard of the movie. I mean, I feel like this is kind of getting some, like a big push, you know, like you need to see Tetris.
Yeah. Yeah. I've been seeing, I know that this played at South by Southwest and it got some buzz, and I've been seeing, it's on Apple TV, Apple TV Plus, and I've been seeing a lot of ads for it. Funny enough, on Peacock.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Oh, it opens on Apple TV today, right? Friday?
I believe so, yeah.
Okay. Yeah, that makes sense. But before Evan and I get into that, just wanted to mention that we have a sponsor piece patron, Heather Sachs, and we want to say thank you, Heather, for being our sponsor piece patron.
Thanks, Heather.
Yeah. And now we're going to get into Tetris, which stars, we had to look this up, but Taron Egerton, mm-hmm. and also stars some people you might have heard of. I don't know.
Toby Jones.
Toby Jones, Rick Yoon, Roger Allam, Roger Allam in some really bad makeup, I might add, but we'll get to that. Mm-hmm. Anyway, so this is Tetris. This is your IMDb summary. It goes like this. The story of how one of the world's most popular video games found its way to players around the globe, not grobe, like I just said, the globe. Businessman Hank, that's H-E-N-K, Hank Rogers, and Tetris inventor Alexei Pajitnov, it's a Russian name. Joined forces in the USSR, risking it all to bring Tetris to the masses. I almost said to the mattresses.
That would work, too.
Yeah, we're bringing Tetris to the mattresses. So this is directed by John Baird. This is written by Noah Pink. It stars, like we said, Taron Egerton. And that is exactly what it is. Taron Egerton is this Dutch-born, American-raised video. Well, he used to be a coder, and now he's more of a, he has his own company, and he's trying to get games out, a game that he designed out in his own company, and it flops at CES in Las Vegas. Mm-hmm. But he sees some people playing, he sees his assistant playing Tetris and finds out from the people who are showing Tetris off that the video game rights are available for Japan. So he's like, ooh, I got to go to Nintendo and see if I can get this game made. And basically what happens is the game is invented by this Russian guy, and this is, Soviet era Russia. So there are all kinds of twists and turns about trying to get the rights from the inventor of the game via the Soviet government, mm-hmm. while sidestepping all of these bureaucratic / spy landmines in Russia, and also dealing with these two English assholes, the Maxwells, who you may know because is it Robert Maxwell? Is that the father's name?
Mm-hmm.
Robert Maxwell, who died very strangely not long after this took place. He fell off his boat and like drowned because he was having a mild heart attack, so they say. And his son, Kevin Maxwell, who was put on trial for embezzling a bunch of money. And then his daughter, whose first name I can't remember how to pronounce, Maxwell, who was Jeffrey Epstein's partner.
Ooh.
Yes, same Maxwells.
I did not know that.
Yeah, because I remember just thinking, like, Maxwells, investment fund, publishing empire. I'm like, I think this is, and then, yeah, it's same family. Wow.
Family same of scumbags, eh?
Yeah, it's really amazing. It seems like their mother is actually a decent person because A, she divorced their father, but B, I think she's like a Holocaust researcher, you know? Mm. So anyway, in the sense that she's saying, yes, the Holocaust did happen. She's not like a liar. She's not researching denial claims.
No, I knew what you meant.
Yeah. But anyway, so we should also mention that that Hank Rogers lives in Japan, is married to a Japanese woman, has Japanese children who also
so many
speak
children.
English. He has at least four, right? Maybe five?
Yeah.
And he speaks Japanese. It's like, I actually kind of like it when movies do this because it reminds me, even though I don't love Star Wars, as you all know, it reminds me of Han Solo and Chewbacca. Hank speaks English to his daughters, but they speak Japanese back to him. And so they have the conversations in two languages, which I just think is very charming. I don't know why. But basically, this is just like what we said. You know, Hank decides, once he finds out that the Maxwells have basically maybe not really got the rights for... there's this thing, and it's, I guess it's kind of technical, and maybe you can help me explain it, Evan, but...
Sure.
The way the contract is worded that Toby Jones has bought the rights, basically, let's just say the Russian government, because they really have their fingers in this. They've bought PC licensing, computer licensing, and they steal video game licensing from Hank after he's bought it, the licensing rights from Toby Jones. And then there's like a gray area as to what a console is. Or is it a gray area with the... It's a gray area as to what a console is, like a home console, right?
Right. Basically, what happens is that Toby Jones, he bought the rights for PC, and then he took the liberty of the contract and like the loose language about what a PC is to basically take arcade and video and like home console license. And so the Maxwells got the arcade and home console license, and Hank is getting the Japanese rights to arcade. And then he figures out in meeting with Nintendo that Nintendo is on the cusp of releasing the Game Boy, which is going to, for handheld, then it's going to like revolutionize things. And so he sees the opportunity, okay, no one's got handheld rights. I'm going to go in and get the handheld rights. And then he just is like, I'm going to Russia. I'm just going to do it. I'm going to go on a tourist visa and I'm just going to go like make this happen and negotiate with the people at ALORG, which is like the government organization that controls the rights. And then in the process, he realizes, oh shit, you know, Toby Jones's character didn't get all these rights. He paid like 10 grand for like PC rights. And then him and the Maxwells are just bilking everybody here.
Yeah. And the way Robert Maxwell is portrayed, I might add, under terrible makeup, is just the world's biggest fucking slimeball asshole. And his son, a smaller fucking slimeball asshole, which is to say younger. I don't know.
Yeah. He's such a prick. The son is like, everyone has to call me Mr. Maxwell. No one could call me by my first name. And I was just so satisfied when Toby Jones just clocked him, just fucking wound up and punched him in the face.
Yeah. Tiny Toby Jones, like reaches up like, you know, Joe in Punch Out, you know, and, or like Little Joe or whatever his name is. The green guy you can see through. And then they get into a fist fight at the end of the movie. And basically it's kind of a cat and mousey, not a spy thriller, although the KGB is involved.
It's a spy movie.
Would you call it a spy movie?
Yeah. I would best describe this movie as, Bridge of Spies meets The Courier meets Argo with a little bit of Scott Pilgrim, because there's stylized video game elements to this. There's a whole, you know, title cards like player one, player two, etc., and showing the different locations and like 8-bit renderings. And then there's a car chase later in the movie, which invokes elements of Tetris.
One of those moments in the car chase is really great when it comes. I don't know if it's just kind of the magic of how they shot it, but this, you know, I don't know. Let's just call it a Yugo, because that's what it looks like. It comes whipping around the corner and they cut to like a long shot of it, like slamming into another car sideways.
Yeah.
And right when it slams into this car, it turns into an 8-bit car for a moment. And it's actually, I didn't love the 8-bit stuff in there, 'cause I thought it was kind of gimmicky, but I thought that moment, that one moment, worked really well.
Mm-hmm.
Do you know which one I'm talking about?
Yeah, I do.
Yeah.
I mean, I think it all worked well, but I agree with you.
It's not
that
I didn't think it worked well. It's just I didn't really notice it, you know, and I feel like that kind of thing is supposed to stand out in a movie like this.
Mm-hmm.
But it's also, I think I don't notice most 8-bit stuff because it's just what I've known my whole life. And I even like have downloaded a few 8-bit soundtracks to listen to, like Dark Side of the Moon done in 8-bit. But whatever. It sounds actually surprisingly good. So, I mean, I don't really know if I need to explain much more because it's just a bunch of people standing in rooms yelling at each other. Yeah, and there's a couple of short car chases.
Yeah. Negotiating, people being followed, calls being recorded, intimidation tactics, like when the Russians in Japan show up at, you know, his office to intimidate his wife and their kids. That was fucking
creepy.
Scary.
Yeah. 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 They say that they're from the embassy, but you're like, are you really from the embassy?
Right. You know? Like scary fucking, you know, bodyguard dudes.
Yeah. And, you know, people saying things like, oh, you have a beautiful family, and you almost expect them to say, be a shame if something happens to it.
Right. You know? Well, I think one of the most intimidating moments is the lead guy on the, I forget his title in the government, but he's the main kind of point of contact.
The slick back hair guy.
Yeah. In negotiation. And so, Pajitnov's kids, he's like taking them out to this area in their apartment building where there's like exposed, you know, window, and he's giving them a lesson, quote unquote, in gravity and how things fall at the same rate. And it's just the most intimidating fucking thing, because he's just, his kids are there and he just feels utterly powerless. And basically that's the overarching threat, is that I could drop one of your kids off this fucking balcony at any second and you do nothing to stop me.
Yeah, that was kind of, I was actually kind of worried that they were going to do it. And then I looked up whether his children survived, and they did. So I'm like, oh, they didn't do it. But yeah, and of course there is an undercover KGB agent posing as a translator who, you know, is working Hank Rogers. And, you know, people are always saying, yeah, you need a translator, sir? And he's like, no. And this young woman, who's of course very attractive, comes up and just, you know, is basically relentless and very charming. And the moment you see her, you're like, well, you're a spy. I mean, come on. You know? But she does translate well, I will say that. She translates directly, except for one time when they threaten Hank Rogers, and she doesn't translate that because I guess the idea is that she doesn't want to worry him because she's still playing the part of just being a translator.
Mm.
But then, of course, you find out she's KGB and she's working with Mr. Slickback Hair Guy. So, I don't know. What'd you think?
I love this movie. Absolutely loved it. I remember seeing some previews for it and thinking, this is the exact kind of movie that I'm going to love. And it is. I mean, like, it just met all of my expectations. It was just like really, like I described it before, Bridge of Spies, Courier, Argo, Scott Pilgrim. These are all movies that I love. I love movies that involve negotiations and people in rooms negotiating and talking, and spy movies. I think this movie makes kind of a bold claim that, you know, the Tetris was part of the fall of communism.
Yeah, that's a little much.
That feels a little bit much for me. But otherwise, I just found this really entertaining. I liked Taron Egerton. I think he was really good in this. And I'd seen him in Blackbird, which is also Apple TV Plus. And I felt like he was so-so in that. And in this case, I felt like the material, he was better with better writing, if that yeah. makes sense. And,
sure.
And the writing in this was better. And so I felt like his charisma, although I would say equal in both projects, it just worked so much better here. And I found like as I was watching him, I kept feeling like, he really does believe this. He really does believe in this game and its potential. And he really does seem like he's doing this because he wants this guy to get credit and to, you know, be shot into the stratosphere as much as he wants to be shot into the stratosphere with this
yeah.
deal. And this, you know, all these promises he's made to his wife and all the stake that's, you know, everything that's at stake with this business. It yeah. feels like he's really trying to make everybody happy.
Right. And also, as a person who loves to play video games and loves Tetris, by the way, whether I'm playing Dr. Mario or Tetris itself or whatever, mm-hmm. I love Tetris. Everyone loves Tetris, don't they? I mean,
yeah, it's addictive. It's fun.
Yeah. And anyway, as a person who has played video games my whole life, it makes me feel better because, you know, there are still people out there who like, I know people who once they found out like The Last of Us was based on a video game, they lost all interest in it and didn't want to watch it.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like, well, that's kind of short-sighted, don't you think? And it just makes me feel like, oh, this movie takes video games so seriously that they've made a spy thriller out of it, out of the story of how it came to be. And it just makes me think like, yeah, video games are something to like, are worthy, you know? Stop telling mm-hmm. me that it's not cool to shoot Nazis, all right? It's fucking great to shoot Nazis. You know, you can extrapolate all video games from this, you know?
Yeah, I mean, it was really cool, the scene where he's has to sign the NDA and he's being shown the Game Boy prototype. Because it's like, I remember getting the Game Boy in 1989 yeah. or whatever, you know, shortly after it came out. And I was just, it was just so interesting hearing the creators in the movie talking about, you know, we could have done full color, but that would have been 8 batteries instead of 4, and 4 batteries was just so much more reasonable. And I was just thinking about that, like, because I also owned Sega Game Gear, which required 6 batteries, and it was just such a bear. It always, you know, batteries died so quickly. It was yeah. just not the same. It was not as fun as the Game Boy. And I've just spent so many hours playing Game Boy, including Tetris and Mario, which you see in the prototype. In the film.
Well, there is, you may know it because you know these kinds of things, but do you remember, I mean, it would have come out before you were born, but there's a thing called the Merlin. It's red. It kind of looks like a phone. It's got like, you know, 9 buttons, 3 across, 3 down.
I think I know what you're talking about. I'm just going to look this up to confirm, but I'm pretty sure I've seen it before.
Like the original Merlin took something like 8 to 10 AA batteries. I'm not even joking.
That's insane. That's too many batteries.
Yeah. And that came out in like the late 70s, early 80s, maybe.
Yes. I've definitely seen this thing before.
Yeah. So I also appreciated that. And by the way, just to prove how cool the Game Boy was, when I was working at a large international news agency in the early 2000s that shall remain nameless, one of my coworkers in his editing room had a Game Boy Color. And we would just fucking, like when we had downtime, we would just fucking play Game Boy Color in like 2003. Mm-hmm. And it was amazing.
Yep.
You know, it's just like, I love playing Mario. This is awesome, you know? So anyway, so to know, I have Tetris somewhere around here. It's on one of my consoles. I don't know if it's the PS4, the PS5, my Nintendo throwback, whatever that little tiny one is that they released a few years ago.
Mm-hmm.
It's somewhere because I remember playing it. But I also play Dr. Mario when I can't find it because I know exactly where that is. But the idea that like a video game, so much hinged on a video game, not necessarily the collapse of the Soviet Union, but all kinds of other things. I found that angle really interesting. And I have seen The Courier. That's the one with Benedict Cumberbatch, right?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Right. Okay. So I've seen that. I haven't seen Bridge of Spies. If I've seen Scott Pilgrim, I don't remember. What's the fourth movie you mentioned? Argo?
Argo. plane, them running to catch the plane at the end and the fake out that they're on a different plane than they were expecting. Right. It was very Argo.
I feel like the, even though the specter of bodily harm does hang over some of the characters in Tetris, I feel like it was more immediate in Argo, knowing exactly what that situation was.
Yeah.
But on the whole, I enjoyed this. I don't think that I loved it the way you did, but I did like it a lot. I think it could have moved more quickly. I think that there, I saw John Wick 4 over the weekend, which is, I'm not joking, 2 hours and 49 minutes long.
Damn, that's long.
And I think that if you cut an hour from John Wick 4, you would have the best John Wick movie. So I feel like if you cut 10, 15 minutes from this, it'd just be so much tighter. Because there is a lot of like watching Hank Taron Egerton just kind of like wring his hands a lot and be like, oh, well, what am I going to do? You know, that kind of thing. It's like, we know how you feel about this. You've made it clear. It's abundantly clear. If there is anything that is clear in your character arc, it is how you feel about this must be successful. But at the same time, even though you know exactly how it turns out, because the Tetris did end up installed on every Game Boy, so you know that it worked. Right. You're still sitting there going like, I don't know if it's going to work.
Right, exactly. And I found that really compelling.
Yeah.
And I think Hank as a main character I found really intriguing too, because he occupies some type of weird ground between like being oblivious and being utterly cocky, where it's like he seems to have some idea of the danger that he puts himself in, but it's just like for some reason it doesn't really sink in with him, and so he's just going all these places and doing all these things that you would someone who knew better would go, whoa, that's a terrible idea, don't do that.
Yeah, well, I also think that he believes in this. There are two things going with him. One, he believes in this game so much that he's willing to put himself at risk to get the rights to it. Mm-hmm. But he also, you know, there's that, it's not really a subplot, although it's not the most, they do play up the family angle a lot, but you know, he's trying to, as you had said earlier, make his business profitable because you get the feeling that it's hanging on by a thread.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And he's doing this to try to get a financial cushion for his family. And he ends up missing, of course, you know, that one of his daughters, Maya is her name, her solo, she's a singer and she has a solo in this upcoming concert at school, and he misses it. And they make a big point of like showing his empty chair. And, and of course that comes back to bite him in the ass, because his wife is like, dude, we already had everything we needed. What the fuck is wrong with you? And it's like, I knew that speech was coming, by the way, but it's just like, yeah, okay. His daughter, Maya, who is now the president of the Tetris company. So I guess it all worked out.
Yeah.
This is what I'm saying.
That was amazing.
So, I mean, this is just it's a solid thriller. I don't really know how much there is to say about it. I mean, I don't think it looks the best of movies I've seen. But I think part of that is because a lot of it takes place in the Soviet Union, and they go to great pains to show you just how depressing the Soviet Union was.
Right. Well, like the food line where the food, you know.
Yeah. The food line, the architecture, the interiors of all the buildings basically looking like a 1950s American steel factory that has fallen on hard times. Mm-hmm. Probably because everything was built in the era of Stalin, the government buildings anyway. And so, I don't know, I didn't love the look of it for that very, very reason. But, I mean, when they're in Japan, they do also play up the neon of Japan and the, you know, big lights and things like that. Mm-hmm. Now that I'm thinking about it, maybe it's just scene specific, because his office in Japan for his company, which is, what is it called? Like
Bulletproof Software.
Bulletproof Software. Boy, you better hope you are bulletproof with those Ruskies carrying around the guns there, Taron Egerton. His office is kind of dingy. So maybe it's scene specific. I don't know. But mm-hmm. I didn't love the way it looked. But I didn't dislike it either. Although I think the guy who shot this shot Sunshine, the
The Danny Boyle movie?
The Danny Boyle movie, yeah.
I love that movie. That movie think it looks gorgeous. Great. Yeah.
Yeah, that movie's beautiful. Okay, so maybe it is specific to scenes, et cetera. But anyway, I don't know. Solid thriller. I'd say if you have Apple TV, go ahead. I don't know that I would recommend this if you had to go pay $12.50 to see it. I don't know. What do you think?
I would. I would recommend you would? It. But I liked it more than you did. So.
That's true. Well, and I also want to make clear, I didn't dislike it. I did, you know, I think the big problem I have is just, I'm just like, let's just make it shorter. Let's just, you know, cut 10 random minutes from it and see if you notice.
Yeah. I mean, that could be for a tighter movie. That's for sure. Yeah.
I think that they let the Maxwells off the hook a little bit too easily, you know, but I don't know. What can you really do about that? They got off the hook in real life too.
I mean, there's scumbags. And I was just kind of like, well,
they do make that clear.
Them getting punched in the face or being indicted or whatever to me was enough.
Yeah. Oh, and just to your point about how, you know, the movie paints this as maybe having contributed to the downfall of the Soviet Union. There is a whole way too long scene where the Maxwells go to Russia and talk in person with Gorbachev.
Yes.
And it's
who
just
Maxwell
like
Maxwell is friends with.
Yeah. Who's friends in air quotes with. And right. Of course, Maxwell is trying to, he's patronizing Gorbachev with the idea that they don't need to pay. It's communism. We're going to give you the rights to all of these encyclopedias that we publish, and you can have them and publish them all over Russia, and you're going to give us Tetris. And Gorbachev is like, haven't you heard the fucking Soviet Union's collapsing? No one gives a shit about communism. They want capitalism. And, you know, Maxwell's like, no.
Yeah, that was a great scene.
Yeah.
As an 80s music fan, I love the Final Countdown scene where they're having the underground party where everyone is singing along to the Final Countdown.
That was
particularly
fun.
Because it reminded me of a great podcast, if you've never listened to it, called Winds of Change. And
is it named after the Scorpion song?
It is, yeah. It's a podcast. Yes. It's a podcast that's all about the song Winds of Change and the rumor that it was written by the CIA as a way to kind of undermine the Soviet Union and bring about its collapse. And it's a really interesting examination of the song and the Scorpions and the era. And so it just felt very appropriate in the scene where everyone's singing the Final Countdown and Taron Egerton's characters, Hank is like, hey, they all know the words to this. And Pajitnov says, you know, good ideas have no borders. And I just, it's a corny line, but it worked really well for me because all I could think of was Winds of Change.
Right. It is a corny line, but for some reason, you know, the guy who plays the Tetris inventor, whose name I've already forgotten, Pajitnov, he gives a really good, like, I feel like, you know, he's this sort of, he's a little depressed, would we say? I don't know.
Yeah.
He's definitely feels like worn down by living in the Soviet Union. Just like he's created this thing that all of his coworkers love and he knows that people outside the Soviet Union love it, but he can't do anything about it. And I think if he had played it too treacly or like cloying or whatever, you know, or more earnest, it would have been. But he says it almost as a throwaway line, like good ideas have no borders, but you know, but I'm still stuck in the Soviet Union, basically is how.
Right.
And I think that his performance is actually really, really good. And I think it's a good counterpoint to Hank Rogers, you know, Hank Rogers, the idealist, and then Nijitnov, the realist. So. But Nijitnov did get out and then co-found the Tetris company in the United States with Hank Rogers. So there's that too.
Yeah, he did make it out. And yeah. I mean, I liked when they were talking about how he coded Tetris on a computer that didn't even have a graphics card. And basically all he told the original Tetris was like parentheses or brackets that were falling on a, on a computer. And I was just like, wow, that is just utterly brilliant. And I love the scene where he goes to Pajitnov's house and he's showing him the original Tetris. And then they were talking about that idea, like, oh, well, how about instead of just removing one line at a time, when you get, you know, more than one line, it they all just disappear at once. And then he's like, oh, I'm going to try that. And then he just goes in the source
code
and
then they just program it. Yeah. And I kind of like how Hank is just like, oh man, I forgot how much fun coding is, you know, because it's just kind of like, huh, I don't know why, like moments like that, because you forget that he was a coder, you know, and then he's basically become a de facto salesman for his own company. So I don't know. It was just a neat little, it kind of roots him in the actual like manufacture of a game's software.
Yeah.
Is that the right way? Did I say that the right way?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Thanks. You know more about these things than I do. So
do I?
I mean, I think you do. I mean, you know, I've always kind of, I feel like you do. How about that? I feel like you do. So yeah, there you go. It's well cast. It's well acted. The woman who plays, Hank's wife, I guess is like a super celebrity in Japan.
Yeah, Ayano
Nagabuchi. Yamamoto? No, that's not right. Ayana Nagabuchi.
Yeah.
Yeah. I don't know exactly what she does, but...
She's a Japanese actress and radio personality, according to IMDb.
Yeah, I read something where she did... She's one of those people who's got like one big thing that she's known for. I don't know.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway, she's good. The kids are good. You know, like kids are so touchy, touch and go in movies. Like, but I feel like, oh, I believe these kids. So I don't know. Yeah, I guess I'd recommend this. Yes. Not as much as you, but I would.
That's good. I'm glad you liked it. I wasn't quite sure how you were going to land on it. So I'm glad that you liked it.
Well, I'm generally when thrillers are, you know, especially of the spy variety are well done. I'm like, yeah, okay. And this did actually remind me a lot of The Courier with all of the like, huh? What? That's me saying like what really quietly to a bunch of different people.
Yeah.
What do you mean? You just got to carry it? Yeah. Got to go into drink? What? Yeah. Via Bugs Bunny, I guess. So anyway, do you have anything else you want to say about Tetris?
I liked the actor who played Belikov, who was like kind of like the lead negotiator on the Russian side.
Yeah,
for Lorg.
He was really great.
Yeah, Oleg Stefan is his name. I thought he did a really great job.
Pronounce that.
He was a great presence, and I also really liked the scene where it was the last ditch effort, and so Pajitnov had to fax something to Hank. And he had to create a distraction. He had to create like a fire in the office to distract people and then just fax something in the nick of time. I just thought that scene was particularly tense. Like, is he going to be able to fax it all in time? Is he going to be able to tear it off the fax machine and leave before anyone notices?
Yeah. Yeah. This is also like a good way to remind people that in, you know, the pre-internet era, communicating, especially from within the Soviet Union, but just like, imagine if you were trying to send a covert fax. Just imagine that.
Yep.
You know, something that takes like a minute and a half to go through.
Right. And if you're young enough that you've never seen or heard a fax machine before, maybe find the sounds because they're loud as fuck.
Yeah. I mean, you got to listen to the Internet Connect, right? Well, not on all of them, but on some of them. And then they always have an annoying ringtone. And then the printing sound is always so much louder than every other printer you've ever heard.
Yeah.
Yeah. Totally bizarre. I'm trying to think of the last time I sent a fax. It's been a while. One return to Song Piece Theater there for you.
Since I have faxed you something.
Okay. So, we're both a yes on Tetris. And a yes on the game, too, for that matter.
Oh, hell yeah. Now I want to go play some Tetris.
Tetris the game, still fun after all these years. I was just playing Ms. Pac-Man the other day. Fucking awesome. Love Ms. Pac-Man.
I was never very good at Pac-Man. Like, I can only play, I have like a very limited attention span for it, but it can be fun.
Well, I mean, Pac-Man itself is, I mean, once you figure out the patterns, it's kind of like, all right, well, this is really easy. But Ms. Pac-Man, they only follow a pattern for like the first 20 seconds. And then like the technology was advanced enough at that point that they figured out that they could randomize all the other paths the ghosts took. So, yeah. So every time they switch directions randomly, they're starting on a new predetermined path and then they abandon it after like 20 seconds or so. Very cool.
Sounds much harder.
It is. It's a better game too. Different boards, more fruit. Fruit moves around. For those of you who haven't played Ms. Pac-Man, but you should have because it came out in 1983. So anyway, that is that's Tetris, and that's all of spoiler piece today. I mean, that's it's a shorter spoiler piece episode. That's okay though.
Yeah. Still fun.
Still fun. And we will be back, of course, next week with all three of us. Yay. Although yeah. I also bought a house recently, so I will be taking a week off to move at some point. And yeah. Anyway, that's Spoiler Piece Theater. As we already said multiple times, we would recommend this. So there you go. I want to thank our editor, Otto Klammer, for taking the heavy lifting of editing out of our hands each week and making us sound good. Thank you, Otto.
Thanks, Otto.
You can find Spoiler Piece Theater anywhere you get podcasts. If you want to visit us on our website, that's spoilerpiece.com. If you want to follow us on social media, we're Spoiler Piece Theater on Facebook, and we're at Spoiler Piece on Twitter, Instagram, and Letterboxd. If you'd like to get in touch with us, please send us an email. We're spoilerpiece@gmail.com, or you can give us a call
at 862-21-PIECE.
And you can tell us, no, Tetris is the worst game ever. It's so stupid. What's wrong with you two? I mean, don't do that, but you could. That's all I'm saying.
I mean, or you could just tell us your favorite video games. You could just call and leave us a message and tell us what your favorite video games are.
And by era, 8-bit era, 16-bit era, you know, you can't say my favorite game is The Last of Us Part 2 because that's so different from Food Fight or Pac-Man. Okay. You know?
So let's refine it, and we can say your favorite old school video game.
Your favorite old school 16-bit. 8 or 16-bit, yeah. So that includes, you know, all your late 70s consoles up to the Sega Genesis. Is that right?
I think so.
Yeah.
I think Sega was 16-bit.
I think so. I don't remember, but we'll go with that. anyway, getting back to how the show ends, if you like the show, please consider rating and reviewing us by going to ratethispodcast.com/spoilerpiece. Or you can rate us on Spotify and Apple Podcasts. That really helps us. Every time we get a review, like more people are like, hey, there's Spoiler Piece. Yay!
Yeah.
It's very helpful for us. And if you really, really like the show, please consider joining our Patreon. As I mentioned earlier in the episode, this week, Evan and I talk about the 1981 Brian De Palma thriller Blowout, starring John Travolta and Nancy Allen. We had a really fun conversation about that. So if you're not a Patreon, if you're not a patron, please consider becoming one. It would be awesome.
Yeah. Yeah. And I would say if you don't become a patron, you don't write us a review. Recommend us to a friend. Spread the word about Spoiler Piece. That also, word of mouth is extremely helpful.
Yeah, that's right. And if you don't recommend us to a friend, tomorrow you're going to get a paper cut. So
chain letter.
Yeah.
This is bad luck for 7 years.
Yeah, totally. Anyway, my name is Dave Riedel. I talk about movies. I write about movies for the Chicago Reader. I'm a member of the Boston Online Film Critics Association, and you can follow me on Twitter, Instagram, and Letterboxd at Dave Sees Movies.
And my name is Evan Crean. I'm co-chair of the Boston Online Film Critics Association and co-author of your 80s movie guide to better living. You can follow me on Twitter, Instagram, and Letterboxd as Real Recon, and that's real as in film reel.
Yeah, and we'll see you next week. Bye, everyone.
Bye.